Hello again. This is Mike Weaver. Welcome to Achiever Training Unit Number 3. I certainly hope you've already listened to Unit Number 1 and Unit Number 2 using the suggested pages of the reference document. If you've not had a chance to listen to Unit 1, you can certainly proceed to develop an in-depth understanding of the Achiever, but I would suggest that you go back and listen to Unit 1 at your convenience. In this section, in Unit 3, we're going to deal almost entirely with an understanding of the Achiever, dealing with one dimension at a time. In Unit 2, we did cover these 6 mental aptitudes. Now we're going to move to the 10 personality dimensions. And we will also cover the 2 validity scales. I believe you will find this information not only very, very useful, but also very interesting, as I did when I was first exposed to Achiever training years ago. I would suggest, as you get involved in Unit 3, that there are 2 pages in the document that you may want to refer to. The first is page 3, where we have a diagrammatic depiction of the evolution of personality, and the fact that personality comes from 3 sources: heredity, biochemistry, and conditioning. And we discussed that in Unit 1. That diagram is useful because as we go through the 10 dimensions of personality, we're going to indicate to you the sources of each of the dimensions. Again, the 3 sources are heredity, biochemistry, and conditioning. And as we go through the 10 dimensions, we'll tell you the sort of the mix of the sourcing of each of those 3 things into that particular dimension. The other page that I feel will be interesting and useful to you is page 8. That is the Achiever Report summary form. And as you listen to the description in this unit of each of the 10 dimensions, it might be useful to you to, at the same time, have that form at hand for reference. With that background, let's begin with the very first dimension, which is dimension D1, energy. For practical purposes, we refer to this dimension as energy. What this dimension measures in summary is tension in the neurological system, tension in the nervous system of the individual. The fancy name is psychophysical toneness. All 3 of the sources to personality are involved in this dimension: biochemistry, conditioning, and some heredity. In the dimension, biochemistry does play a significant role, but all 3 of the sources are involved. Again, this dimension measures tension in the nervous system, in the neurological system. People on the low end of this scale carry a lot of tension. It is a negative from the standpoint of health. It is a negative from the standpoint of the ability to concentrate. People who scholastically, despite the mental capacity to handle scholastic work, but struggle, we often find are very low in this dimension and have inability to concentrate. There's a lot of energy on the low end of the dimension that is not resolved, and the person lives with that level of nervous system energy all the time. There's a certain uptightness here. It is not good from a health standpoint simply because the individual's ability to handle stress is not as strong as we would like it to be on the low end of the dimension. And over time, they pay a penalty from a health standpoint in that inability to handle stress. People on the low end of this scale can be accident-prone or error-prone, and those who are low in this scale, one has to keep that in mind. If we're dealing with positions involving safety, it's certainly a consideration if they're low on this dimension. One of the fundamental characteristics of this dimension, which is a little heavy for me to describe to you, is This dimension is, in one sense, a measure of body aging. The lower on this dimension the individual, the more rapid they are aging from a physiological standpoint. In other words, their physical age tends to be higher than their chronological age. Not a good situation. People on this end of the dimension, again, do not handle stress well. They have a certain frustration with things in general. Some very symptomatic things is low noise tolerance. Generally, this is someone who is running pretty uptight. There are certain negative aspects of this dimension on the low end of the scale for many, many jobs. Most significantly, I think, being on the low end of this dimension is a negative thing for the individual. It is definitely a health issue. The lower on this dimension that a candidate falls, the more important it is for them to be involved in regular physical exercise. That kind of exercise will not necessarily change the position on dimension D1 energy, but what it does do is it dumps out the tension. And if there's enough consistent physical exercise going on, that can do a lot to offset the damages of the stress that the person feels on a daily basis. Exercise here, extremely important. It does not necessarily change the condition, but it helps relieve the negative aspects of being low on the dimension. On the higher end of the scale, we have people who are very calm, very laid back physiologically. If there's any negative on the high end of the scale, it's the fact that they many times are slow to act on things from a physical standpoint. And at the very high stay 9, 8 or 9, can even be a little lethargic. In certain roles and certainly certain positions, it is a real negative to be low in this dimension, but it's also true that being very high in the dimension in some roles and some positions can also be a relatively significant negative because of this low sense of physical urgency about things. Being on the high end of the dimension is a very positive thing at a personal level for people because these people carry very little stress. Stress to them is like water off a duck's back. They are not impacted by even levels of stress the average person is impacted by, and they experience practically no stress compared to people on the low end of the scale. From a health standpoint, it's a good position to be in. In some jobs, requiring a sense of physical urgency about things, it can be a definite liability. A great deal of evidence, a great deal of research in this dimension suggests that the ideal stay nines for most work, most positions, are probably stay nines 5 and 6. And you could broaden that out to stay 9, 4 through 7. Ideal 5 and 6, but 4 through 7 is a good range for most positions. Let's move now to dimension D2. Dimension D2 is called flexibility. It is the dimension in the achiever that deals with values, belief systems, and it's called the subconscious dimension of personality because it is formed very early in life. Again, we refer to it as the subconscious dimension of personality. People operate from this dimension without conscious awareness of their position on this dimension because, again, it is formed subconsciously very early in life, we think primarily between by the age of 5 to 8. This dimension has a lot to do with consistency and predictability. People on the high end of the scale are very consistent and very predictable. People on the low end of the scale, very inconsistent, and very unpredictable. At one time, this dimension was called character strength. There was a lot of pushback on that terminology of character strength because it appeared that we were passing judgment on people. And yet the term character strength, in reality, really does apply strongly to this dimension. People on the high end of this scale are very consistent, very predictable, high character strength. Their word is their bond. They are dependable. They are responsible. And if we have any dimension that the achiever that reflects on spiritual and religious beliefs and so forth, we would find many people that have strong feelings and values in that area would be generally high on this dimension. People high on the dimension have a concern for other people. They many times are selfless and unselfish in their behavior and towards others. Interestingly, when someone is very high on this dimension and is in a leadership role, their strong compassion for people sometimes prevents them from taking management and leadership action with someone who is not performing on the job. Not necessarily relieving the person of the job, but perhaps working with them consistently to help them overcome whatever their liabilities are. So sometimes compassion wins out, which from the standpoint of the organization can be a negative. It can be even a negative from the standpoint of the other employees who prefer leaders who will take action when it's obvious that they should. So on the high end of this dimension, we have people that are consistent, reliable, strong concern for others, predictability and consistency are hallmarks, so we certainly place great value on them. On this particular dimension, the ranges that research show seem to be the best overall for a wide range of jobs are Stay 9s 6 and 7. And we might broaden that out to Stay 9s 5 through 8. But that gives you a general sense of where we'd like to see somebody score in this dimension most of the time for most job situations. Just as we have consistency and predictability on the high end of the scale, on the low end of the scale we have inconsistency and a lack of predictability. People on the low end of this dimension tend to make decisions based on the short-term return without regard to the long-term consequences. This, of course, can be a pretty negative thing from the organization's standpoint. People on the low end of this dimension tend to be expedient. Again, they tend to be short-term focused. If we could for a moment talk about the words motivation and manipulation and compare them, because I find a lot of confusion in that arena. An honest attempt to motivate people merely suggests that if you are trying to move someone to do something that you would like to see done, motivation needs to be based on fairly representing, at least as fairly as you can to that person, what the effort required is, what the resources required are of them, and what kind of benefit they can expect. If all of that information that's presented is as honest and fair as is available, then that's an honest attempt to motivate someone. Manipulation, entirely different situation. There, one part of the equation, or both of them, is misrepresented. Either the benefit of doing whatever it is exaggerated, or the effort, the resources required to do it, are undervalued. In other words, we don't really tell the person what is really required. That is manipulation. Certainly in Achievement Associates, we're big on motivation, and we're very negative about manipulation. People on the low end of this dimension drift towards manipulation. Many times in interview situations, they call into play a lot of misrepresentation. It may even be reflected in their job resumes or their references. As we mentioned earlier, One must always take resumes in a selection process with a grain of salt. The person on the low end of this dimension, again, expedient. They want results right now. They'll worry about any negative consequences later. When we get into Unit 4 of the Achiever Training, we're going to do our best to cover some key combinations that come into play on understanding the 10 dimensions of the Achiever. Basic understanding of the Achiever comes down to understanding what each of the dimensions measures, but real experience and skill with the Achiever comes from over a lot of experience looking at Achievers and analyzing Achievers, beginning to understand the many combinations between dimensions, and also starting to learn the more significant combinations. One of the significant combinations is the combination between dimension D1 energy and dimension D2 flexibility. When someone is low on both of these dimensions, we have someone who is carrying a lot of tension, a lot of frustration, a lot of potential health issues, coupled with someone on the flexibility dimension who is expedient, may tend to be manipulative, and may make decisions almost entirely based on the short term. That is a negative combination. On the high end of both dimensions, we can end up with a situation where we have somebody that has a relatively low sense of physical urgency, and from the flexibility dimension, perhaps some difficulty handling change. And they're consistent and they're predictable, but very strong amounts of change sort of throw them, rattle them, when they are very high on the flexibility dimension. Again, we mentioned the ideal range on the flexibility dimension, probably in the 6-7 range. So those two dimensions taken together can tell us a lot about a person. And if we had to draw a general conclusion, someone who scores mid-range or a little above mid-range on both those dimensions is going to be a good fit for many positions. As somebody who is high on both these dimensions, there may be some attendant difficulties there. They might be a little difficult to manage because of resistance to change, etc. Scores that are on the low end of both of these dimensions really suggest real problematic situations, and one has to be careful before hiring someone who tends to be low on both these dimensions. Being low on either one is a liability in most positions. Being low on both of them increases that liability. Let's turn now to dimension D3, organization. A very important dimension at a very practical level. Let's review for a moment the sourcing of the dimensions that we've talked about so far. We learned that the sourcing of D1 energy really lies in all three of the components, heredity, biochemistry, and conditioning, and that the biochemistry component has a relatively significant impact. Dimension D1 can be changed, but it is difficult. And one of the practical suggestions we made for people that are low on the dimension is the importance of regular physical exercise and physical conditioning, which can not necessarily relieve the tension or the tendency for tension to exist, but can periodically dump the tension out of the system. When we came to flexibility, we identified it as the subconscious dimension of personality, formed very early, and for that reason, very difficult to change. People operate from their position on flexibility without a lot of self-awareness of where they are on that particular dimension. Most techniques that have been used to reposition people on that dimension have involved subconscious techniques, repetition with audio material, etc. A difficult dimension to change. Organization. The issue of work habits, good or bad, is one of the easier dimensions to actually work on. It's a dimension that is entirely conditioned. It's entirely conditioned, and therefore subject to change if somebody really wants to change it. In our work in Achievement Associates, we spend a lot of time on time management and time efficiency improvement, and we've identified four primary causes of poor time management. One is a lack of clear goals. If someone does not have clear purpose, clear intent, why in the world then would they care how they use their time? It just doesn't really matter. When you have clear goals, though, you understand that certain activities and actions must take place to achieve those goals, and you start to become more sensitive to the idea of using your time well, because you simply value your time as regards the effectiveness and efficiency in achieving those goals that are important to you. A second issue involving time management is attitudes towards time management. Occasionally, in working with individuals, we've run into people who resist any kind of time management system because they don't want to feel like they're hemmed in or they're boxed in or they're being controlled. The irony here is that people that lack any kind of time management system are probably more influenced and more controlled by others. They end up working more on other people's goals and objectives than they do on their own. So the idea that having a time management system somehow results in you losing control is just that. It's a fallacy. The lack of a time management and a lack of a time management system, you're actually giving up control. Control of your own life, control of the ability to reach your goals, etc. So lack of clear goals comes into play. Attitudes towards time management comes into play. And in fact, when we talk about goals, you might view time management and time management systems as a sort of goal setting in micro. It's the individual tasks, activities, and goals that lead up to the major objectives. Another reason people don't use time well is they simply do not have a system. And that's one of the easiest things, obviously, to work on. It's important to understand that this is entirely a conditioned dimension, which means it's an issue of habit formation, an issue of habit formation. So what about the dimension itself? On the high end of the dimension, we have people that are very structured, very methodical, very planful. The only negative of being very high on the dimensions is sometimes these people lack the ability to think on their feet, to improvise, to deal with the unexpected, to adjust to new situations or new challenges. So there can be an issue of being so structured and so formalized in your approach to time management that you lack the flexibility to deal with the unexpected. At the other end of the scale, the disorganized end of the scale, we have people that basically live by the seat of their pants. And there many times are very good at adapting and adjusting, but they are not very planful, not very structured, and tend to waste a lot of their own time, and unfortunately many times waste a lot of other people's time as well. Probably the ideal range on this dimension might be in the area of stay nines 4 through 7, depending on the position. In that range, there is a degree of planfulness and structure, yet there is also the ability to adjust and adapt to situations as they arise. We know that with top salespeople, their range on this dimension is about 4 through 7. They need a structure and a plan from the standpoint of approaching the selling cycle and everything involved in it, but they also need to be able to think on their feet in sales presentations and in planning for those presentations. So this is a dimension that can be worked on. It's one of the easiest dimensions to work on. If somebody comes to understand its importance and the fact if they're not achieving their goals and the form, the focus, and in an effective and efficient time frame, that perhaps they need to get a handle on their time management. Too much structure, too much planning can be a disadvantage only when that's in the extreme. A total lack of planning or organization is obviously a big disadvantage in almost all situations. One of the major challenges associated with organization and time management is the issue of procrastination. Procrastination is pretty well associated with being low to the left on this dimension. One of the other interesting aspects of Dimension D3 organization is to relate it to two kinds of reasoning, deductive reasoning or inductive reasoning. In deductive reasoning, we move from the general, from what we're trying to do here, from what the purpose is, and then move into the specifics of what must be done to accomplish that objective. Business people tend to, at least effective ones, tend to move from the deductive to the specific, the inductive. They are very results-oriented. In preparing a speech, one would start with the objective of the speech, what the results of the speech are to be, and then move into designing the components. An NFL quarterback on a pass play may have a primary receiver, but he moves from the deductive, which is, I want to complete this pass, to dropping down to, if my primary receiver is covered, I have to scan the field and find secondary or release receivers. The quarterback that's good moves from the deductive, the general, to the specific. The deductive is complete the pass. The specific is, how am I going to do this? Deductive reasoning is associated with the high end of Dimension D3 organization. People that are almost entirely inductive are on the low end of this dimension, where they may be spending a lot of time doing a lot of variable things, but haven't thought through, what am I really trying to accomplish here? That's Dimension D3 organization. Dimension D4 is communication. In one sense, communication is the old extrovert-introvert scale, where the more sociable, outgoing people-oriented people, are on the high end of the scale. And the people that are more quiet, more reserved, again, more private, private is a very good operative word here, are on the low end of the scale, the introverts. This is a dimension that in one sense is a measure of an activity preference, where people on the high end of the scale prefer activities involving people, and those on the low end of the scale gravitate more towards activities involving concepts and ideas and things. That's not a rule, but it is a general guideline. People on the high end of the scale can end up wasting a lot of time because of their high affiliation needs. And this is where a combination of a low score on organization, Dimension D3, and a high score on communication can suggest some problems. Because there's already disorganization and sometimes a lack of planning and focus, and now it's complicated because the person on the high end of the scale has a very strong need for affiliation with others, and they spend a lot of time meeting those needs. Another issue that comes into play in bringing people aboard into an organization that are low on this dimension, many times there's an initial adjustment period where they are misread by the other employees. They are perceived as possibly aloof, perceived as uninterested, uninvolved, and in some cases that might be true. But in many cases, all it means is this person is very private and very quiet. And sometimes that tendency towards privacy and quiet can be misinterpreted until other employees get to know the person. So this is a very interesting dimension, a very important dimension. It is significant that in people being attracted to other people, this is a dimension where many times opposites do tend to attract. Communication, a measure of activity preference in one sense, with preference for spending time with people on the high end of the scale and spending time with ideas and concepts on the low end of the scale. What is the ideal range here? Very, very dependent on the position that the applicant is applying for. It would be safe to say that an ideal range in many situations would be mid-range, maybe 4, 5, 6, 7, where when sociability is required, the person can actually act that out. But where some quiet time is required to get something done, they can also be comfortable in that situation. So balance on this dimension in many roles and responsibilities, areas of roles and responsibilities, balance on this dimension is many times the result that we're looking for with the applicant. Dimension D5, emotional development, is, according to Dr. John Shirley and Dr. John Moore, their opinion, the most single important dimension in the achiever profile from the standpoint of its impact on the individual's overall behavior and, in fact, impact on their lives. Again, this is dimension D5, emotional development. This dimension is the key to emotional adjustment. People on the lower end of the scale to the left have difficulty adjusting emotionally to situations. In any organizational setting, they have some tendency to be disruptive because of this inability to adjust to situations. They carry a lot of stress. They have high levels of frustration with almost any situation, and their behavior is characterized by this frustration and an enormous level of impatience. On the high end of the scale to the right, we have people who have excellent ability to adjust emotionally to any situation. They are calm, collected, they handle stress extremely well, and they are extremely patient. If we use patience as a hallmark of the dimension, the challenge for somebody, for the organization with somebody on the low end of this scale, is their tendency to be disruptive in an organizational setting, too impatient. On the high end of the scale, the challenge can be that the person on the high end of the scale, they are extremely tolerant with difficult situations or difficult people, and sometimes lack a sense of urgency to get results that we need in a lot of organizational positions. This is a good time to bring up one of the hallmark combinations among dimensions. When someone is high to the right on dimension D1 energy, they have a low sense of physical urgency. When they're high to the right also on this dimension, they have a low sense of emotional urgency. Those of us who are well experienced with the achiever call someone who is high on both D1 and D5, we call that the calm, tolerant pattern. The reverse is true if you have people that are low on both D1 and D5. Now we have people that are uptight, carry a lot of stress because of the ergic energy within their nervous system, and at the same time we have the inability to adjust to things well from an emotional standpoint on dimension D5. So a combination of high scores on D1 and D5 or low scores on D1 and D5 tend to be problematic. This dimension, as we mentioned earlier, often called, again, the hub dimension of personality, extremely important. One issue here that it's helpful to understand is that this dimension was designed with a nominal age of 35 years of age. So a 35-year-old, we would like to score in the mid-range, 4, 5, and 6. For most roles and areas of responsibility, the 4, 5, 6 range on this dimension is really recommended. That's good balance from the standpoint of emotional development. The age-appropriate score for a 35-year-old is the 4-5-6 range. We can now talk about, however, the age-appropriate level on this dimension for other ages. And to do that, we shift the scale up one stainine for each 7 years, or down one stainine for each 7 years. So if the nominal and the desired position for a 35-year-old is the 4-5-6 range, and we take 7 years off that and move down to somebody 28 years old, the recommended range for them is 3-4-5. That would be their age-appropriate emotional development. If we go down to an age of 21, a range of state 9, 2, 3, and 4 would be age-appropriate emotional development. Moving up the scale in the other direction, for someone that's 42, a state 9 range of 5, 6, 7 would be age-appropriate emotional development. For a 49-year-old, a range of 6, 7, and 8. And for a 56-year-old, a range of 7, 8, and 9. A key point here is that that tells us whether or not the person's level of emotional development is appropriate to their age. What we're really interested, though, in matching people to positions for performance, generally we would like to measure and understand their actual emotional development. It may or may not be age appropriate, but what we're really looking for is what is it actually, and what we'd like it to be is in the 4, 5, 6 range. Again, a very important dimension. The cortex in the brain is the seat of logic. The thalamus, the seat of emotion. People on the low end of this dimension are strongly influenced by the thalamus, sometimes at the expense of logic. So they are highly emotional. People on the high end of the dimension, the balance here leans more towards the cortex. Logic, patience. Again, a hallmark descriptor on this dimension is patience. The sourcing of this dimension is both hereditary and conditioning in some mix. Let's move on now to three dimensions: assertiveness, dimension D6, competitiveness, dimension D7, mental toughness, dimension D8. Each of these dimensions measures something different, but taking them in trio, we refer to them as the drive dimensions. And the reason is that all of them, despite the fact that they measure different things, have characteristics on the high end of the scale that have to do with the ability to achieve goals to get results. Let's move now to talk about the first of the three, as we call them, drive dimensions. This is dominance or assertiveness, dimension D6. We use the terms almost interchangeably. If you look at the Achiever Report summary form, we use the term assertiveness. This dimension is a measure of the individual's need to control, need to be in charge. The most fascinating thing about this dimension may be that its sourcing is probably 85% in heredity. The sourcing is almost 85% in heredity. This means, among other things, that this dimension is difficult to change. People on the high end of the scale are direct. In the extreme, they can be assertive. They are courageous. They are fearless. Strong need to be in control. This is the power dimension of personality. People on the low end of the scale actually avoid conflict and confrontation, where people that are very high on this dimension can actually seek conflict and confrontation. The people that give you direct answers are those on the high end of this scale. The people that give you more evasive, more involved answers are on the low end of the scale. Those on the low end of the scale do not like conflict or confrontation and will do almost anything to avoid it. People that are extremely high on the scale will almost seek it out in some situations. Whether we like it or not, it is factual that people in key management and leadership positions, or people that are to be very effective in sales, particularly new business development, in both those cases, a dominance level of at least 6 or 7 is extremely important. People that are lower than a dominance level of 6 or 7 can have great difficulty in leadership roles or in developing new business in a selling role. Again, this dimension is about 85% based on heredity. It is interesting to note that because this dimension is primarily sourced in heredity, we have an interesting situation in that anybody who is high on dominance had at least one parent who was a very dominant personality. if the candidate or the person completing the achiever in question is male and only one parent is dominant, it's most likely the mother. If, on the other hand, the person involved is a female and only one person is dominant, it is most likely the father. We mentioned earlier that this dimension is very difficult to change because of the hereditary nature. What do we do if someone is in a leadership or a key selling position that is low on dominance? Many times they would be possibly sent to an assertiveness training program, in a sense that the people conducting the assertiveness training program have no awareness of this dimension or the fact that it's hereditarily based. Trying to teach somebody who's low on dominance to be dominant on a daily, habitual basis is doing them a disservice. They would be extremely stressed, extremely uncomfortable. It simply doesn't work. What you must do with a key salesperson or manager who is low on dominance is to help them to come to understand the situation and then teach them to be dominant only in the key situations where they must be to get the results they need. In other words, they need to learn to role play dominance, but to save up those items, those issues that come up where they need to be dominance, to keep those to a minimum, save up their big guns for the big game, so to speak, learn to role play dominance, but save that role playing for the really critical situations where it's required. Dimension D6, assertiveness or dominance. The next dimension, dimension D7, is competitiveness, and it's the second of the three dimensions which we referred to as the drive dimensions. Through experience, we've grown to describe the competitiveness dimension as the degree of goal-directed behavior, the degree of goal-directed behavior. This dimension is entirely conditioned, entirely learned, and therefore it can be worked on if it's necessary to move to a different position. In many organizations and in many positions, we need people that can get results. These are the people that have a lot of goal-directed behavior. On the low end of this dimension, we have some very positive characteristics. People on the low end of the dimension are team players. They're cooperative. They're collaborative. They get along well with others. Those are all admirable characteristics. The challenge is sometimes they are so driven by the need to be liked, by the need to relate well to others, by the degree to have harmonious relationships, that they sort of sell out the high end of the dimension, which is the need to get results. On the high end of this dimension, we have people that are extremely driven by the need for results. And they sometimes suffer the issue of not being very good at being team players, not being very effective at working well with others. In a lot of situations and roles on the competitiveness dimension, we would like people somewhere in the 5, 6, 7 range. People on the high end of this dimension who are extremely competitive are very good at getting results, but many times are not good at working with other people. They are sort of fierce, competitive, independent loners in some cases. This is a dimension that, because it's one of the three drive dimensions, has to be taken into account with the other two drive dimensions, the assertiveness that we just talked about and mental toughness yet to come. If we have somebody that is very high on competitive drive and also very high on assertiveness, we obviously have a very definitive personality, but somebody who may have a lot of challenges as far as relating well to other people. If we have someone who is very low on assertiveness, person who avoids conflict and confrontation, and they're also low on competitiveness, now we have someone who is great at her personal skills, gets along well with others, but is not necessarily very good at achieving results. Competitiveness, again, entirely conditioned or entirely learned. If there is any one device, any one system that can help somebody build competitiveness, it is the power of goal setting and specific purpose. If we teach people the art of goal setting, we can get them to develop personal goals programs both on and off the job, and they're a little low on competitiveness. They can move up on this dimension several stanines in some cases because they become very committed to the goals, and that drives their competitiveness desire and moves them up the scale. This is a dimension that can be worked on, dimension D7, competitiveness. At the outset of our training, I suggested that I would cover all 10 of the personality dimensions by the end of Unit 3. This is the end of Unit 3, and best laid plans, I'm not quite there yet. So we're going to go to Unit 4 to cover the last three of the personality dimensions: mental toughness, dimension D8, questioning, dimension D9, and D10, motivation. Those three dimensions also obviously very important. This is a good time for me to raise the issue that the 10 personality dimensions involved in the Achiever are essentially independent of one another. If you're involved in statistics, this would mean that there are very low correlation coefficients between any of the 10 dimensions. On a practical level, this means that we see achievers with every conceivable combination of relative positions among the 10 dimensions. If we had any two dimensions that had very high correlation coefficients, they would be so interdependent that you would just roll them into one dimension and give it a different name. These 10 were selected because they do the best job of defining a personality in the necessary number of terms to give a very complete picture. As we move into Unit 4, I will be discussing mental toughness, the last of the drive dimensions, as I said, questioning, dimension D9, motivation, D10, and we'll quickly review the questions that determine the validity of the Achiever. I appreciate your involvement in learning about the Achiever in units, hopefully 1, 2, and this one, and I look forward to sharing more ideas with you in Unit 4. I hope that you found this information as interesting and challenging as I did, as I learned all about the Achiever. This is Mike signing off, and I'll see you in Unit 4.